Welcome back to The Inspired Educator, empowering new teachers to thrive. Today's episode is a little different and very special. This marks the final episode of season one, and I want to take a moment to thank every single one of you for listening, sharing, and growing with me on this journey. Before we officially kick off season two, I want to replay one of my favorite episodes from this first season, a conversation with veteran special education teacher, Shannon Pointer. This episode holds a special place in my heart because it centers on something I care deeply about, building inclusive classrooms. Shannon's insight, honesty, and practical advice are everything I wish I had during my first year in the classroom. As we head into season two, we'll be launching a brand new mini-series focused entirely on classroom management. And this conversation with Shannon is the perfect bridge to what's coming next. I hope you get as much out of this episode as I did. Let's dive in. Today, we're talking about inclusion and collaboration, what it means, and how to make it a reality in your classroom. Our guest today is Shannon Pointer, a seasoned special education teacher. Shannon will share her expertise on creating inclusive classrooms and building strong relationships with special education teams. Ms. Pointer, welcome to the show. I'm so excited to have you here. Let's start by having you introduce yourself to our listeners. Tell us a little bit about your background and your journey in education.
All right. Well, hello. I'm Shannon Pointer. So I've taught special education. I've been in the field for 17 years now, 15 years as a lead teacher. I've taught everything from kindergarten through ninth grade with students. I've worked self-contained settings, resource settings, helped students with varying things. So currently I work with a lot of students who are neurodivergent. So a lot of students who have autism, ADHD. Previously, I had a lot of experience with students with emotional disturbances. I work with private clients on tutoring and some like family advocacy and support for IEPs. And then I have my master's in school administration, which I just recently got into the Admin Academy for Special School Districts. I know.
Congratulations.
So looking at moving all of that experience from that bubble as an educator into maybe some admin and teacher coaching and helping everybody out, helping everybody figure out all those pieces to the big puzzle.
Oh my gosh. Like, I don't even know what to say. That experience, like, oh my gosh. So tell us why you decided to go the special education route. Why did you choose to specialize in special education?
Yeah, so it's actually for a moment, and this is a personal piece to my story. So that as a child, I was always a high achiever on what I could and fixated, and later on learned that pieces of that were how my own brain was set up, but I'll digress on that. We'll hop back into that later. But I played sports, and so basketball was my everything. And when I was in high school, that was my identifying factor. I didn't really socialize. It was just I was involved in clubs, and I could do that. And so my junior year high school, I had enough, and I quit basketball, and I didn't know what to do. And I kind of had this identity gap. And I started noticing, like, I needed to have more of a social life, and I wasn't great at it because I had an acute anxiety disorder. And I was like, well, what do I do during like lunchtime? Like, I don't want to go to the cafeteria. I don't want to this and that. And we had our students. So my peers that were in self-contained settings, their lunch period was the same as mine. And so I started like kind of seeing them come in with the teachers they were working with. And my parents were actually friends with one of the SLPs that worked in special education. And so I just asked if I could like ever be of help. Like, did they need anything in the classroom during that time? Because for me, I just wanted to be out of like where I was at. And so I started stepping in and like making copies, doing simple stuff, and then started like just wanting to work with my peers that were in there. Cause it was like this opportunity to see people for people. And like, they didn't know me from anything outside of that. And I didn't know them yet. And so it was this opportunity to get to know my peers and then start recognizing, like, I get emotional at it. Recognizing they needed an opportunity to be humans too, and that not everybody's equipped the same way. And so I can take what I have and open that a little bit for them, or be that connecting piece. And so I got a little taste of that. I worked as the president of a club at school, and I got a little piece of that and started seeing like the difference it did make and the impact it had on people. And that's kind of like, that success was like a lock in, you know? And so that's just,
oh my gosh, wait, so this is high school. We're talking high school.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh my gosh. I do not know any high schooler that would be that mature to place themselves, to intentionally place themselves in a different setting.
Mm-hmm.
I am in shock. And I don't know why I am. I know you. I have no Shannon time now. And I am learning something new today. And I shouldn't be shocked because this is her amazing and beautiful personality. This is the person that she is. I am just, every time I talk to you, I learn something new and I'm just blessed with something, some new advice. I just love this so much.
No, but I mean it. It was, and like, that's what I was saying where I was like later on diagnosed and looked into different things, but I didn't recognize, like, when you're talking about the maturity part, it was more like in that moment, it was like, I needed a shift for my identity because my identity was masking with people. So my teammates I would mask with, and I was like them, or whatever, like, you know, I was in student council, I was masking. I was in AP classes, I was masking, and I didn't have an opportunity to do that. So then like stepping into that, I needed a role to be in. Like I had to have a purpose, otherwise I didn't know how to function. And just watching how that purpose soothed back and forth, like what it meant to me to be in an environment with people that I didn't necessarily need to mask the same way, that there was like an understanding of like, no, I'm just nervous about that today, or I'm just this or that. And then being able to be of help was a thing. But it was, I mean, yeah, my mom's always like, you're resilient. I'm like, you know, it's funny that life makes us do that. Like, it's just, you know, you got to get in where you fit in, Crockett, you know?
You do. Oh my gosh. So I'm going to shift just a little bit. I want to make sure that our listeners have an understanding of some of the vocabulary mm-hmm. that is being used right now before we move forward today. So inclusion is a big buzzword in education. It has been for quite some time now, but I have learned that it means different things to different people. From a special education perspective, how would you define the word inclusion?
Okay. Ooh, so maybe better. Okay. So I would say like inclusion is just, it's a space where like everyone's welcomed, first of all. Like, so it's a space that's built for all of us to be welcomed into access. Inclusion is a desegregation of everything, like at whatever level it is that we're looking at. When we talk about special education, the Rehab Act is 1973. Before that, there was no law that said that students with disabilities could be in a school setting with their non-disabled peers. That's 1973, right? So there's, you know, recent history. In 1980s, we still had large buildings where they were institutionalizing people for like varying types of disabilities. And so really what we're looking at when we talk about inclusion for special education is just making adjustments so we can meet all kids where they are. It's kind of like if I have a garden. So if I have a garden and I'm growing plants and my plants aren't growing, I'm checking my soil. I'm checking how much sunlight, like maybe this plant didn't need to be planted in direct sunlight. It needed more shade. Maybe these plants only needed this amount of watering and this one needed more watering. And so I'm also, well, you know that about me, Crockett, but I'm also the garden facilitator at school. So really, like when I step into that space and I look at it and I step back into my classroom now, that's what we're doing. Like we're gardeners of our students. I'm looking at it. And if I have a kid that maybe you're not receiving enough watering from me, right? Or maybe you're another student that's getting overwatered by me. Or maybe it's just a shift in where you're at or who you're around. It's a change in that soil. It's looking at it that way. So it's saying like, you know, the only person really that has a choice in the classroom to be there is the teacher. Like, and even if we don't enjoy it that day, we chose to be there. Our kids don't choose where they're at, but as their teacher, we're here for all of them. And so it's doing what I can and what we can to kind of shift, meet them where they're at, and like admit to the statistic data of like, one, this is a highly marginalized group of people, right? Like this is highly marginalized historically. And then two, this is like, it's a challenge to us, but it's a worthy challenge. Like those tough parts we put in, it's a momentary challenge for us, for people who are going to be handling life with a disability their whole life.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh my gosh. I really hope you all are taking notes to everything that Shannon is saying right now. I was going to ask you what makes an inclusive classroom and why is it so important, but I think mm-hmm. you nailed it, and especially mm-hmm. with your analogy of using a garden.
Mm-hmm. It's the truth though. Like it's, yeah, we don't look at the plants and like say like, well, you're a failing plant, like, or you're a slow plant, or you're a this and that, you're a plant, you know what I mean? And like that idea, well, so we both, since we're friends, we both follow each other on social media, but it was a thing that you had liked that I had posted, was there's not high or low students. It's just our students. Like our kids are coming into us wherever they're at. It's not that our expectation on them isn't that driving factor. It's really us adjusting and finding them where they're at, learning how they learn and helping them grow. Like that's part of yes. our profession. Like that's that yes. the science and art of teaching, you know?
And that definitely applies to all of our students, mm-hmm. right? There's a certain single. Population. It is yes. all of the children that we serve. And I'm going to say this and we're going to move on. We're not going to get stuck here. This also applies to educators that are in the building. This applies mm-hmm. to our new teachers that uh-huh. are in the building. This applies to our student teachers. It applies to our seasoned teachers in the building.
Yes.
I'm just going to leave that one right there.
Just going to do with it what you will.
Exactly. So for our first year teachers, it can be really, really overwhelming to create, to intentionally and authentically create an inclusive classroom. Mm-hmm. What are three actionable steps that they can take to start to build a more inclusive environment for their students?
I got you on this. So first of all, I want every new teacher to hear me when I say, and my mother would attest this, I've done this for a long time and it doesn't stress me the same, but like, if you feel lost or you want to cry or this, that, it's not okay that you feel like that, but you are not messing up and you are not alone. So like, that's the thing is, as teachers, like, please, please love and respect the fact that you're also in a learning pattern. And like, that's a beautiful thing to be in, because if you're learning with your kids and like that back and forth, it's beautiful. Like you're going to keep growing. So that's the first thing. That's not an actionable, but that's just like internalize a little bit. But three like quick things that like can be put into place that don't take like a whole huge amount of things. One, I would say for an inclusive, and this is inclusive for like your students with language. Like, so if I'm looking at special education, also if I'm looking at like my students that are multilingual learners, all of that, I want visuals. Excuse me, I have a hiccup, but I want visuals in the room, right? So visuals for whatever it is that you think that you need. On those visuals, open up and talk to your speech and language pathologist and your special education teachers, because oftentimes they're going to have access to things like Board Maker and stuff like that. And I know, Dr. Crockett, you and I have worked together in like a cooperative teaching thing. So like, you know, like it's if those people are equipped, come to them and just ask them for it. You know what I mean? Ask them if they have it. Hey, what's the visual you're using for this kid for this? Or are there basic visuals I can have? Because you don't have to go online and try to find whatever. You're oftentimes going to have people in your building with visuals. So one is visuals. Two, I would say, is to have adaptives in your classroom. So if you can have adaptive equipment, as far as like, if I'm working with littles, if I can have simple things, right and left hand scissors, squeezing scissors, having pencils that are appropriately sized, pencil grips, have appropriate seating for them, like have like reading strips and things like that for your readers that might need it. Have those things available in your room off of the bat. Just because if I was going to send somebody in to build something, I'm not going to send you without a hammer. I'm not going to send you without your tools. Like they need their tools. So just making a classroom where you have those things on hand. One, they can be bought off of Amazon or Temu. I know we don't have money though, right? That's got it. Two, talk to your occupation. For real though, because that's what happens. We're like, oh my gosh, I don't have the money. Talk to your occupational therapist you work with too. Speak to the occupational therapist. Talk to them about what they think you should have in a room. Because what I need in a kindergarten room for adaptive equipment is going to be different than what I need in a fifth grade room for adaptive equipment. But you have occupational therapists and they know those things. And like my OT that I work with, like we work closely. So what she brings in to do on like a session with my kids, I'm going to talk to her and see if I can get some of those tools. And if she doesn't have it to give me it, I'm going to ask her like where I can get it on the cheap, or I'm going to go by the Dollar Tree and see if I have it. It's a little bit of extra effort. But again, like if you want your learners in your room to be able to access it, they need the right equipment. And so if I'm looking at somebody with a physical disability and I can make that adjustment for them, make it for them easily, like because it makes me feel more included. You thought of me ahead of time, right? You thought of the fact I'm going to be here. And then the other thing is just the the mindful piece in your room. So it's not like, let's hum and like, oh, and like, here's my bowl and bing, and then this and that. It doesn't even have to be that. It's being intentional about how you're treating yourself and your kids. It's making an environment that can be therapeutic and soothing in a very chaotic place. So it's things like building a community, like making sure that your kids have a love and respect of each other in that community. Like take that time. Like take that time to empower your learners that are in there. Take that time for them to get to help each other. Take that time to have therapeutic breaks in the day when you need it. And you yourself take that time to do the reflective. And it doesn't have to be reflective journaling and this and that. It can be get in your car and don't pull out the parking lot for 5 minutes and just sit and let that day process back out. Because when we just bottle it all, there's, you know, I don't like reliving my day, so I don't want to re-talk to somebody about it. But if I don't stop for a second and process it out, it's too much. So that part's an actionable for like them. You know what I mean? Is just kind of take that with yourself. And yeah, just the community. The community in your room makes a giant difference. And community in your room is just humanizing each other. Community in your room doesn't mean that you need to go through a special PD with somebody and buy a special book from whatever person needed a check that year. I'm sorry I said it, you don't have to. Now there's a lot of information out there, but it's remembering like the golden rule. You know what I mean? Yes. Like treating you how I want to be treated, and then working with your kids on part of what we teach the kids is how to be human to each other. So I think that piece is enormous on like building that environment though, you know?
Yes. I love your analogies. Let me say that. Thanks. I also love how almost everything that was just stated ties back into things that we've been discussing on our podcast. So one of the big things we started out with is building student relationships. Mm-hmm. When you talk about your third strategy, the mindful piece, it all connects. It's mm-hmm. why building relationships is so important. It is how you build those student relationships. And it is also the reminder that we're not saying to baby your children. We're not saying to give them anything that they want. We're not saying that you have to go to basketball, football, soccer games outside of school. We're not telling you to do that. We're telling you to be very intentional about the way you treat your students inside the classroom mm-hmm. with the time that you have for them. Be very mm-hmm. intentional about the space that you are creating for your students and for yourself.
Yep. That's right. It. Would I want to be here every day? Yes. Would I walk into here every day if I had to be a kid? Would I cry to my mom about walking into this space? Like, and to be honest, because I mean, I can balance. And also, if you don't have that piece in line, showing up to the sporting events or the whatever recital thing, that's like a blip, but it's not going to adjust your relationship with them over time. Kids are humans. And kids are just as intelligent as us. They're not as knowledgeable as us, but they're as intelligent as us. And they notice those things. And so it's coming in and being genuine. And don't do the whole like, well, I have to put on this and that face of my kids. No, you watch me cry. I have challenging babies. And there's days where they challenge me past the point of like, I'll be like, all right, friend, listen. And we kind of have to reel back in. And I'll have a real talk, though. I'll be like, you know what? Like human to human, that was not expected behavior. And like person to person, like that is not acceptable what are we trying to accomplish, right? And like, is this bringing us closer or further away to it? And what is it you need right now? And how can I help you do that in a way that doesn't shut this down, you know?
Yes. And that is one of the things that we are going to circle back to on another podcast. We are going to talk about specifically how do we deal with student behaviors.
Mm-hmm.
And that is key right there. That what you just said is key. And I don't care what the behavior is.
No, that's it. That's
you
it.
Named it. You just no, named it.
Sincerely. And anybody listening to this that has like either, again, worked with me or been around me in the multitude of districts I've been at, they know some of the behaviors that I've seen from baby. Like they know. And like, so it's, yeah. And that behavior, it's communicating something to you. So like, figure it out. Like, take a minute. You're an adult with an adult brain. You have the capability of slowing down when they don't.
Yes.
Yep.
I love it.
Want me to come back on that one? I got you too.
All right. You all heard it. She's already offered to come back. You heard her. So you have given us strategies that we can use immediately. One of the things that I wanted to ask you is about collaborating with special education teams. What advice do you have for new teachers when it comes to working with resource teachers, when it comes to working with paraprofessionals in the classroom? Because I don't think everyone thinks about what it looks like to have two adults in a room at the same time. Sometimes I know I've had three adults in my room at the exact same time. And depending on relationships, there's a power struggle there. Not intentional. But when you have that many adults trying to help either the same child or the same group of children at the exact same time, it gets complicated. And sometimes you don't help the children at all.
That's it. There's a lot of chefs in one kitchen. It is.
Exactly. Yeah. From your perspective, what advice would you give to a new teacher on collaborating with resource teachers and paraprofessionals?
So this makes me so excited as a question, like, because this is a huge connecting piece between, and I know like, I know that traditional thought on like special ed, and it's a their kids or this kid or that kid, or that's one of Ms. Pointer's kids, or that's, you know, this and that. And so it's like, how do we work as an actual team and like, and not have any us versus them or this or that? And it's not in a mean way, like you were saying, it's just like the dynamic of what everyone's looking at. So first of all, know that dynamic and that sense of like is coming from both ends. You know what I mean? Like the humans coming in are having some of that same, like doing some reaching out, like early, asking questions, communicating, team building, humanizing each other, right? Like, and also like when I'm talking about team building, it doesn't have to be, you know, the official this and that. It's just having some standards and norms. Like for like one of the standards is just making continuously. And if somebody proves me wrong, they prove me wrong. And I have in my career been proven wrong, but I'm going to always make the assumption that whatever you are doing and whatever we're stepping into is with the best intent for the children. And that being the case, automatically we're on the same team. Automatically, because even if we see it different, we are here for the best outcome for this kid. And so that's the first thing in it is building that communication part and having a sincere understanding of we are all here for the same reasons. And even though like maybe as a case manager for a student, I might get into dicey situations where I need to advocate a little bit, but it's not done disrespectfully. Do you know what I mean? And in the same way as a gen ed teacher, if you're advocating for your student, right? And again, take a second. Are we advocating for the student or am I advocating for myself? Because, and both of them matter. Don't get me wrong. Do not get me wrong. But if I'm approaching someone, is what I'm telling you what that kid needs or is it what I need for a minute right now? Like, is that child's needs like outweighing my capability of meeting it? And that's okay to come in and have a conversation about without tearing that child down and saying, hey, you know, I'm new to this. I haven't had a student with these needs. Like, what do you suggest I do? And if there's a suggestion made, try it. Like, try it and understand that some of those suggestions, especially if we're looking at behavioral things, I need 6 weeks of like you trying it with fidelity. And it is not, and please know that a lot of things are not going to work right away too. That's a big note. Please know that it's probably going to get worse before it gets better. And that is not to stress anyone out. That's to say I'm going to see an uptick in whatever it was I was trying to replace because we're working with human beings. The kids are humans, same way, right? And so they have their way of doing. They have their way of seeing things. And if I'm setting in to like reset that pattern, like try what's differentiated, try what's given to you, take data, make notes. Like you and I, when we work together, we'd be like, hey, like I have a question on this and that for especially about one love bug that I think about all the time that's in middle school now. But anyway, sorry, I'm getting old. But I was like, it's that constant communication and it's the trust and give it a minute. And if it doesn't work after that minute, it's okay that it didn't work. But we have to be able to say, like for a data-driven decision, I have to be able to say that we put it in place for 6 to 8 weeks. Like I'd prefer the 8, but like 6, because I know it can be really hard. And like, I want to see how it actually works. And also like when you have those paraprofessionals and people like that coming into your room, talk to them about helping you put some of those things in place specifically and talk to your, like, if you're having a tough time with your resource teacher, like not with the teacher, but like not knowing how to like have the paras do what it is that you need for them to talk to the teacher and like work collaboratively to say, hey, can we make sure there's clean cut expectations on what I need done for this student? Or, you know, or I'll have teachers come in and let me know like, well, I noticed this or that and I wish that they would have helped with the kid with this and that. You can tell them and you can tell, you don't have to say it rude, but you can tell them because that's an adult that's come into your room to support that student and accessing what you're teaching. So you as the teacher, if you think it needs to be accommodated different, you're allowed to say that. And it doesn't have to be an argument. It can just be, hey, this is what we're doing. Or if you can give that to them ahead of time too. And I know that's another step, but if you do have paraprofessionals that are coming in your room and you're not sure how to utilize them, if there's specific stuff you want for them to like cover or do with those kids, get a binder together and have it there. And have it there for them ahead of time. So then you don't have to stop what you're doing in your classroom, and that's a system. You know what I mean? It's going to take you a day ahead to plan it and have it printed. And this is coming from a person that's a come in the morning and print out what I need. So I get it. Like, I get that you need to get it together. Like, that's fine. But have it there, because it takes a portion of that out. Because if you're trying to teach a room of 20 plus kids and you're working on a curriculum that you don't know quite yet, and you haven't internalized it all the way, and you're trying to manage that classroom and include this other student, just take that piece off of the, I don't need to talk about it right now. Like, here's what it is. You had it to go through. You can always, like, again, if you have access to like curriculum that like paras and things like that can look at and have an idea of too, like, those are all options. And again, it takes everybody doing a little bit of extra work. But the other thing is, what we've done traditionally hasn't worked. And so like, we have to do the extra work somewhere. Like, mediocrity is still work. If we work mediocre jobs and we come in every day and we check in and we check out, we are still exerting energy. We are still putting our spirit into that. We are still spending our time and our lives doing it. So why would we not work in a way that, yes, it does take a little bit extra steps, but it's achieving what we set out to do, if that's making sense. So like, I do get that it's that. But as far as like people in your room, you're allowed to say, hey, or you know, can we try this with them? And if it's not received like you needed it to be, talk to your lead teacher. And it doesn't have to be punitive. It's just, hey, like, we're all here for the same reasons. And that's what we need to do with it. So I'm trying to think on what else I got on a tangent here. Oh, and then I was going to say for new teachers. Okay, ready? Next asterisk. For new teachers on IEPs and understanding IEPs and things like that is, understand that you don't have to know the entire IEP, but you do need to know specific parts of it. And so when I like the beginning of the year, we always share out like either a cheat sheet file, whatever, Google Doc that has the key components that you as a general education teacher need to know. So this would be a note-taking moment for any note-taking people, would be the things you need to know from that IEP as a general education teacher. You need to get eyes on their PLAF, which is their present levels of academic and functional performance. The PLAF tells you everything that's going on with that kid. And if it's written appropriately, it should have what they qualified in, how that impacts their educational progress. It should have what accommodations we've used that didn't work, what accommodations we've used that did work, what their strengths are, what their parents' main concerns are that they're going to, what their goal updates are, like from their previous goal. So again, a well-written IEP should have all of that in the PLAF. If that IEP doesn't have that in the PLAF, and I'm going to be a little bit spicy, it should be written different. And that's a conversation to have with a special ed aspect, right? Because those are things that we as special education teachers, and like, that's my professional responsibility to make sure if you picked this paperwork up and read it, you would have the information you need for that student. So that's the first, is your PLAF. Know your student's goals. And I say know their goals because they're working on them in special ed, but knowing their goals is going to give you a good window into that student's current like functioning performance on what it is they're working towards. So that's an opportunity for you to understand and incorporate that into your room. It never means to water anything down. It means if I know that I have a student that's working on written expression and their goal is to complete like two sentences on a given topic or this or that, then I'm going to hone in on that when I am doing a writing thing with them. And I'm not watering it down, but I'm making sure that that's a solid thing, because 30 minutes a day with special ed is not going to cover them generalizing that skill. So if you know the goal that they're working on in your classroom, and Crockett, you're a beautiful all-star at this because I have personal experience with you, you are able to then give them the extra time to apply and work towards that goal in the room, which is life-changing to a student with a disability. Like, that opportunity to take what it is. And that's a partnership part, you know? That's also saying, like, when goals are written, you as the gen ed teacher should have a say in what those goals would look like and how those goals are going to be presented in the general education classroom. So you don't have any say on how I do it as a SPED teacher in my specific time that I have, but you do have some say in how we go about making that happen in gen ed. So what I say, PLAF, goals, you need their accommodation page. And the thing about their accommodation pages, you need to do it. like, you have to do it. And that's not to sound rude. It's saying, know what's on that accommodation page. Know how often it's being said to be done. If you don't know what it's asking you to do, ask their case manager, ask the special education teacher. Because one of my biggest things, especially when I'm working with a kid with certain challenges, is if you're, I work as a resource teacher now, and I adore my teachers. But when an adult like comes to find me to like kind of tattle on like what a kid did for the day, I'm like, okay, well, what was your response? And I'm not saying it to be like, well, what did you do? I'm saying, what was your response? So I know whether or not we're doing the accommodations as we're supposed to. Because at the end of the day, if you're going to press and say, the student needs more services or they need this or that, that can go through due process if you're not accommodating them as they're supposed to be in an inclusive room. And so that's another layer of challenges. Somebody getting special ed services doesn't mean automatically that anybody washes their hands. And as an advocate of all the children, I would never allow anyone to wash their hands of any child. And so it's just saying, now you have a team here in place to help you learn how to get them into your room as we can, you know? And then the last thing is just know their minutes. Know their minutes. And also, not to be petty, if you notice that your students aren't receiving services as per their minutes, like make a note and ask about it. And that's not to sound funny. It's just saying the reality of how school systems work and things like that, especially if you're looking at resource, is this or that happened on this day and da, da, da. Just make a note. And like, I have really good relationships with my teachers. So if there is a day where I'm like, shoot, I can't pull this group at this time or whatever, like I'm letting people know ahead of time. And then I'm looking at where I can make some of that up. So it's just, it's knowing it. It's not knowing it as a got you. It's just knowing it as, if that's what's been prescribed for that kid, that's what should need to be happening for that kid. So yeah, those are the parts of the IEP that I would say you really, really need to know. What other parts were there? Look, this is a big question, Crockett. It is. There's like several different parts in it. So then building off from there, oh my goodness, if you guys are still listening here on the podcast to my voice going on and on, I appreciate it so much. But as far as like that part with the IEP, and I say these things not to sound harsh, and I say these things not to sound, it's just the reality of it. It's saying like, I've worked special ed long enough and looked at back and forth of like why certain things don't work. And these are some of the whys. But as far as like attending meetings, and then being an active participant in the meeting. So like the thing about like the IEP is it's developed. And I see so often where Gen Ed teachers feel like they just got this thing tossed on them, right? And it's like, well, I didn't really have any say or this, that. And you do. And it's not that we shut down a meeting and we don't work as a team. It's saying talk ahead of time before I get in that meeting. Talk about your concerns ahead of time. If you have a problem that you're trying to approach, take a minute before you go in to like unload. If you need to vent about the problem, vent about the problem to someone else before coming to the team. Vent about the problem to your friend that, you know what I mean, that can take you being frustrated for a second, you know what I mean, and not going to take it personally or this and that. Get that piece of it out so that I can reapproach it with my level of professionalism that I want to have. Because some of the challenges that these kids have, they're big, really difficult challenges, and it's stressful. And like, that's 17 years of being stressed out with my babies. I get it. You know what I mean? Like they are challenging, and you can get fired up. So take some time, get that part off, and then come back in with the idea of like, we are in this together. Your input does matter. Set aside some of like the any of the me part, because this is not about you. This is not about the special ed teacher. This is not about anybody other than that child and like what is best for them, right? So it's a lot of like removing me from it, which isn't easy. And like, we all got our ego and stuff. But I promise you, like as a sped teacher, I have yet to walk into like a meeting and have anything personally with like any gen ed that worked. I'm like, oh, no, like, because it has nothing to do with that. So yeah. And then what was I going to say? Oh, see, this is the part where I get like, does it cut the, do I get to sound choppy now? but I was going to say that as a resource, like I love it when teachers treat me as a resource to them. I love it when educators come to me and they're like, hey, because like to be able to say that I've been in special ed as a lead teacher for 15 years and working with people with disabilities for 17, that's a really big accomplishment. Like a lot of special education has a high turnover for the fact that we're facing a lot of the same challenges, plus that added layer, and people get burnt out, you know? And so I love the opportunity to try to share that knowledge, that my knowledge of like what works best for all students does no good in a vacuum, and that maybe like my reach can be better. So like, let me help. You know what I mean? Let me step in. Let your resource teachers work us. Do you know what I'm saying? Like, make me do my job. Like listen to the SLPs, like use what your speech and language people are using. Talk to the occupational therapist, use what they're able to use on like sensory levels and stuff. Like, tap into all these people, especially like, so working in St. Louis and working with special school district, there's a ton of resources. There's a lot of resources. We are resource heavy. And what I notice is that we're resource heavy and we're like application bare. Like it's not always utilized. So it's there and everybody's like, but it is here, but isn't that, well, how do we utilize it? Be comfortable approaching them. Be comfortable telling people what you don't know, because that's how we learn. We tell our kids the same thing. Educate yourself on the same principle that you would expect your children to be educated on. So if I don't know, I ask a clarifying question. If I don't think that I can do it, I'm asking you how you're going to support me in doing it. If I don't, you know what I mean? These are all things that we can all do. So yeah, I mean, that's it. And again, just always aware of the fact that like, we're problematizing, but we're looking at a human being with a challenge. And so, yeah, that's it there. I'm done. Hop off, preachy.
My goodness. I love it. I love it. I love it. Shannon, you have given our listeners a lot to think about and a lot to implement, which I absolutely love and new teachers need. Mm-hmm. Before we wrap up, do you have any final words of encouragement for new teachers coming into education? For student teachers who are just now starting their student teaching experience in a time that is extremely difficult because of things that could be coming, education mm-hmm. may be uncertain for some of us in the public education space. Mm-hmm. Do you have any words of encouragement to uplift and to help them get through the rest of this year?
I do. And they're outside of be completely delusional, because come on now, like we can be real about our challenges and still feel hope and encouragement. So the first thing I like want to say to anybody stepping in now is thank you. Like sincerely, and I mean that, thank you for joining that field. Like thank you for caring, because you step into it for a caring. So like, thank you for being who you are. Thank you for being caring. Thank you for all you do. And like, you matter and you're seen. Like that's the first part, is I want everybody just, and I sincerely mean that. And if I see any of you anywhere, I'm going to give you a high five and thank you the same way, because like, we need people, like, and we have that big mass exodus. So like, first of all, like, feel proud of yourself that you are strong and brave and you're stepping into that role. And the other thing is like, just breathe and understand like, you cannot know or do everything at once. Like you can't. And anybody that's expecting you to do that, I'm going to not cuss, is an a-hole, but like they're being delusional. Anybody that expects you to have all of it together is crazy. And I can tell you the majority of us are not crazy. So the majority of us do not think you should have it all. If you have veteran teachers that are willing to come in and tell you stuff, even if somebody's not saying it the nicest way, take their word and listen. You know what I mean? Like, you don't have to know it all. We learn every day. Whatever you're doing right now is with the best intention for your kids. If you learn better. Do what you can with what you got, where you're at now. And like, understand that like, in that moment, like you can be in it, but not of it. And so like, in those times with your kids and stuff, like I'm here with you, but I am not, this is a integrated experience we're experiencing, but I don't have to be like of it. I don't have to be anxious like my kids feeling right now. I don't have to be upset. I don't have to be communicating this way. So like, be there with them and recognize that you as the adult have a moment that you can push your brakes. It's okay. Especially like, I guess my biggest thing as a special ed teacher, especially, and like that being where my like heart of hearts is taking a minute to, and this part gets me like real emotional, you know me, Crockett, I like to get worked up, but like just recognize what your moment of patience means to that human being with a disability. Recognize that your moment of patience and understanding may be one of the first times that somebody stopped to hear them. Recognize that if I couldn't speak to you right now, Crockett, and like just naturally come up with the sentences and stuff, and I had all these ideas in my head, how stifling that would be. So like, recognizing that while I might have a moment of frustration because I have a child coming into me with whatever different challenges they're presenting, I have the blessing of being in the mindset that I can be of help. in that. You know what I mean? Like, and kind of removing ourselves. So like, it's not minimizing yourself completely, but it's admitting that my momentary like patience and discomfort, like it does. I wouldn't even say could. Any of my gen ed teachers I work with right now, I thank them on a regular basis for the opportunity they give to my kids, because it is life altering. And if you talk to their parents, I have students that came into kindergarten that weren't verbal communicators at that point and things like that, that are talking to their peers and talking to their moms and dads, and like what that means to the people that love them and what that means to that child. And like even just the opportunity to be included in a classroom with their peers, like how much friends mean to us, how much human connection can mean to us. So like, it's just, I see you and I get it. And I know it's a challenge, but also just know this challenge for you only lasts for the majority of us, like for a year that student's in your room. And this is a person that is going to have to mitigate a world around them their whole life where this is an impact. So yeah, that would be the biggest thing is, and it's not, you know, and it's openly saying like, I know that's a challenge, but like, I think if you have such a big heart that you're stepping into education, like then that's something that you can understand over time. And I think it's a shift in how we talk about what we're doing. But I really believe that like, while I probably have a level of like focus and patience that's not always typical, I don't think anything that I'm doing is something that anybody else couldn't do. Like any of the things that I would ask anybody to do are simple enough that like, you can do it. You can do it. And you're not going to do it all right now, but over time, you got it.
I just love that. Love it, Shannon. Thank you so much for sharing your expertise and your passion with us today. I know our listeners are walking away with practical tips and a better understanding of how to create inclusive classrooms and how to collaborate effectively. For all of our listeners, if you found this episode helpful, please share it with a fellow educator, and don't forget to subscribe or follow so that you don't miss any future episodes. As always, remember, you are not just surviving, you are thriving with a purpose. Until next time.